So last Tuesday, New York voters overwhelmingly rejected a proposal to convene a constitutional convention. But that does not mean voters think everything in New York State is fine the way it is, because objectively speaking, it is not. We have arcane election laws, loosey-goosey campaign finance rules, and a legislature that's enabled a gentleman's agreement on redistricting for decades. While some believe that a constitutional convention would have been the best way to deal with all of these issues in one fell swoop, there are alternative avenues for political reform. And today we are exploring them with three passionate good government reformers. Susan Lerner is the executive director of Common Cause New York. Jennifer Wilson is the director of programs and policy at the League of Women Voters. And Blair Horner is the executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group. Susan, Jennifer, Blair, welcome back. Great to have you all with me today. Are you guys?
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. So, why don't we start with Susan? You, my greatest fear, and I'm just speaking personally, is that lawmakers are going to interpret this defeat of the Constitutional Convention as a victory for the status quo. What do you think?
No, I don't think so at all.
Phew.
I think that it is perfectly clear to everybody at different levels that the public is not happy with the state of affairs in Albany, but for various reasons did not trust the procedure under the Constitutional Convention. So I think it gives us an opportunity to really highlight issues that are important to voters and to really push quite hard in 2018, which is an election year, for some very basic reforms that are way overdue.
Yeah. The fact that this is an election year means what, Blair? That the lawmakers are willing to do the public's bidding more than they would otherwise?
Well, that's the hope that when they face voters, that they think to themselves that they have to show that they're responding to a problem. And what I think makes this election year different from previous ones is there's an expectation that some high-profile corruption cases are going to be going to trial. So you have, for example, the two top aides to the governor who are scheduled to go to court this during the legislative session. There is an expectation that the retrials of the former legislative leaders could occur during that period of time. And a former state senator is also looking at a trial for a corruption case. And so all of those things are happening during the legislative session, are happening in the first half of a year that will end with an election. And so we think that the normal things that are screwed up about New York, which is pathetic voter participation rates, secrecy in government, all of those things are going to still be on the table. But the scandals could easily, we hope, would easily drive major reforms during session.
One would hope. I think it was you, Blair, that said that when both of the legislative leaders were indicted, that this was New York's Watergate moment, but really not much happened.
No, it turned into the kick the can moment, and that was in an election year or around an election year as well. So, you know, I think the pressure, there's a different kind of pressure because the governor is running for re-election this time, not just the legislature, which is sort of a faceless entity. The governor is running for re-election. In 2010, he promised to be the guy who would clean up Albany. There are reports that he has national ambitions. And New York is considered among, if not among the most corrupt in terms of the number of indicted and convicted public officials. So I think that's a bad sort of situation to be in nationally. I think it's a bad situation to be in within the state of New York. And these cases, at least some of them, look like they'll be coming to a head during the legislative session. So that creates, I think, an opportunity for major reforms.
All right. So we've heard both Susan Lerner of Common Cause and Blair Horner of NYPIRG use the word opportunity, Jennifer Wilson. Now, you put out a press release after the 78% to, you know, whatever, 21% defeat of the Constitutional Convention that said you were very disappointed. Do you now see an opportunity, or do you still feel that things are pretty bleak here?
Well, I will say we've been reaching out to
you. Well, hold on for one second. Give us one more time. We're having a microphone problem. There we are. There we are. Great.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah, it needed to be plugged in.
Oh, of course.
Those kind of things happen here. All right, so...
Right, so I will say a lot of these groups who were opposed to the convention have now come to us and said, okay, we want to work together. We agree. There's so many things that need to get done. Let's do these together. Even though we were on opposite sides on this other issue, we can still be on the same page on ethics. I mean, I think everybody agrees. We need to do something about ethics. And I know you just had Senator DeFrancisco on here, who is the sponsor of a clean contracting bill that our groups really, really pushed for this last session and really thought was going to pass. It was such basic reforms, transparency, you know, oversight, authority, and we really thought it was going to pass, and nothing happened. And they just, like you said, kicked the can all session and just nothing happened.
So let's talk then about some of the what's on your wish list, okay? You mentioned ethics. Can I assume that a stronger J-COPE is on your agenda?
Absolutely.
In what way?
Absolutely. We'd love to see J-COPE be truly independent. Kind of the same thing with transparency. You know, it's so hard to see what J-COPE is doing and what's going on there. We'd also love to finally close the LLC loophole, the limited liability company loophole that lets companies and individuals essentially give unlimited amounts behind these shadow companies, these shadow LLCs. Just general campaign finance reform would be great. Pay to play. Of course, the clean contracting stuff, having the database of deals. Reinvent Albany has been working really hard on those two proposals. And we really think that it's going to pass this year, especially with all the hype around the trials.
So Susan Lerner, talking about that clean contracting, one of the reasons that Senator DeFrancisco is running for governor, he said to us just now, is that he was frustrated by the fact that piece of legislation never made it to the floor for a vote. What's your comment on that?
So I think that's on the legislature more than the governor.
It absolutely is. It's his frustration with his own party,
right?
And
exactly.
John Flanagan.
So I mean, you know, he's in the leadership of the Senate, and so I find that sort of an odd complaint. It's the legislature that has to stand up and straighten out its spine and be a adequate check and balance to the governor. Even in a powerful governor system like we have here in New York, the legislature has a role to play, and they need to play it. But, you know, I think one thing that we're going to be focusing on, which I think is the most basic thing, is improving our election system.
Yeah.
We have to have a healthy democracy. We have to have people who feel that their votes are counted and that they have a voice in our system. And that starts with improving our election systems here in New York, which are just not up to the appropriate standards.
Now, these things, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that they are constitutional changes, yes?
Like, not all of them.
Not all of them. What is and what isn't?
Well, for instance, we could adopt an automatic voter registration system, which has been shown in other states to not only increase the number of people registered to vote, but to show a substantial increase in people who actually do vote. And early voting is something which could be set up, which is extremely important for working people and people with odd schedules. It's just a basic reform, which 37 other states have, and New York hasn't bothered to put into place. And it's really a question of telling the population, telling voters, your vote counts.
Yeah.
We are going to do everything we can to make our elections work efficiently for everybody.
Yeah. An anecdote, I spoke to my sister-in-law who has three children and works full-time, and she said, I couldn't go vote because I'm at work by 6 and I'm not home until 10. You know, I'm sure that that's not an unusual story. What we're going to do is take a break. We're talking with three passionate good government reformers about what they want to see going forward when it comes to ethics, redistricting, voting reform. We'll be right back.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO. 2.5 million members speaking with one voice to ensure a better life for working men and women. Information at nysaflcio.org.
We have three guests today. Susan Lerner is with Common Cause. Jennifer Wilson is with the League of Women Voters. And Blair Horner is with the New York Public Interest Research Group. So we heard that from the League of Women Voters, campaign finance reform is their number one priority. Susan Lerner says voter reform. Blair Horner, what's on your wish list for this session?
Well, the reform plate is quite full, as you've heard from my colleagues. We want it all. I think, though, there will be, again, we don't know what's going to happen in these court cases. It may well be that the individuals who are standing trial will be found innocent. But the tale that will be told of how contracting works out or has worked out in the past, I think will create interest in things like Senator DeFrancisco's bill. And so where we're going to be focusing our activities, I mean, obviously we'll be working on the voting reform. Susan's quite right that we have an awful system and that has to be fixed. There's no reason why in the 21st century we should have 19th century voting systems. I agree with Jennifer that the campaign finance system allows for basically unlimited donations from some of the most powerful entities in the state of New York, which influences the state's democracy. But I think also there needs to be a strong response to what's going on with regard to these cases, and that is going to bring up the issues of contracting, pay-to-play, which sort of overlap in the campaign finance system. The governor, for example, last year in his budget proposed some restrictions on campaign donations from entities that had contracting business before the state. I think that there's opportunities there to look at. I mean, the city of New York has a strong system. It could be something that could be implemented at the state level. And some of the issues that Jennifer mentioned earlier about the database deals and that kind of stuff, I think those things could emerge as top issues during the session.
Transparency and accountability when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Let me just mention one quick thing on the transparency. The governor, at some point this calendar year, will also have an opportunity to weigh in on the issue of openness in government. There is a bill that did pass both houses with overwhelming majorities to strengthen the state's freedom of information law, and that could be a first step in terms of creating a climate in which reform is a top priority for the session in 2018.
Susan, do you know what this bill would do?
I'm sorry.
Blair, what would this freedom of information law do specifically?
Well, it changes the standard by which the court would award attorney's fees for someone who's bringing a case in a freedom of information law dispute. And we think that that would add more firepower to those who are frustrated by the lack of transparency in state agencies.
It's a very simple change, and it just enables the courts to alleviate the financial burden of having to sue to get what are public documents released to the public.
So, Susan, election lawyer Jerry Goldfeder put out an email yesterday, basically with some of his recommendations, saying even if the legislature doesn't take action, that people can address some of these issues locally, like the state's high campaign finance contribution limits. New York City did it. Why can't Syracuse, Buffalo, or Albany do it? Can you address that?
Absolutely. There is nothing that is stopping different municipalities from having a campaign finance system for their own municipal elections. And we definitely encourage the municipalities and the counties to take a look at the campaign finance landscape in their elections, as we are seeing more outside spending pouring in to local races. I think it's extremely important for local jurisdictions to take a look. You know, there is the New York City style matching fund system, but now we've got the democracy voucher idea from Seattle.
I don't know that idea.
Basically what it is every eligible voter gets $25 vouchers, I think it's three or four of them, which they can only use as a contribution to a local candidate.
Huh. So you're actually voting with a voucher.
You're supporting a candidate of your choice with dollars. There's a designated fund that comes out of a pool of property taxes in Seattle, and it was quite effective. A lot of people used it, and what we're seeing is that if you invite people to participate in elections, they participate much more readily than if you just expect that somehow or other they're going to find when the secret primary is happening.
Right. Okay. So a few other ideas. People in cities and towns can also make changes like local term limits, and they can lower the number of signatures required for candidates to get on the ballot. I guess I am interested to know if you're still going to pursue, Jennifer, some of the other reforms that you had talked about so passionately in the lead up to the election. I'm talking about reproductive rights, protections for the LGBTQ community, things like that.
Yes, absolutely. Especially the reproductive choice issue. I mean, this comes up every single session, but I think with what's going on at the federal level right now, now more than ever, having the Reproductive Health Act pass is so important.
But we said that last year.
Yeah, I feel like we've been saying it a lot.
Yeah. I mean, do you feel like you've only been doing this now for like a year or two?
Mm-hmm.
Blair has been doing this for like 150 years. Is that about
I'm
right?
I'm calling from the grave.
I'm calling. Yeah. So, but do you guys ever feel like, you know, deja vu, I'm trying to get some of this stuff done again for the, you know, umpteenth time?
I think there was a new energy this year, though. And I'm not just saying that because it was only my second year with the league. But I feel like there was this fresh energy this year after the election of these people I'd never seen before, storming the Capitol, having rallies, doing lobby days, doing things that was probably out of their comfort zone, too. But on these issues, on ethics, on voting, on reproductive health. And they are seeing what's going on nationally. And they know that in New York State, we need to be protected here.
Did you guys get that feeling, Susan?
Absolutely. I mean, we have more volunteers, we have more activists than we've had in many years coming to Common Cause, working with us, particularly on election reform. The Easy Elections and Why Coalition is an indication of exactly that kind of energy. All of these grassroots emerging organizations, networks, entities, because they're not formalized in most cases, who are now been activated because of the November 2016 presidential election and really want to see New York become a leader again. So, and I, you know, Susan, what is the alternative? Is the alternative throwing up our hands and saying, well, it's never going to change, so let them do what they want? I think the alternative of...
Right, that is not
is
an alternative.
Absolutely not acceptable.
Right, exactly. Blair, what about you? Are you seeing... I mean, your organization depends a lot on the energy of students. Are you seeing interest in change?
I mean, the short answer is yes. I think I agree with Susan that there's been a change at the grassroots level after the 2016 election. The people seem more fired up. I've seen it across the board in all of the aspects of our organization. When our college student board met in the summer, they made democracy issues our number one priority for the upcoming year.
What does that mean?
The issues of campaign finance, ethics, voting in particular, were issues that they're interested in. It's the first time in the 150 years that I've been working with NYPERG that the board designated that. Normally it's more focused on things like higher education or the environment, which are still priorities for us, but the board was keenly interested in sort of the process of governmental decision-making as an organizational priority. I never heard that. And at the grassroots level, we are getting a lot more, a similar sort of situation as to Susan. We have a lot more people interested in what we're doing and a lot more people looking to participate. So there's a lot of energy across the board. It's not just even on democracy. I see a lot of it on environmental issues in particular as well. Climate change has fired people up, excuse the pun. But it definitely is a... Now, whether or not that ends up being energy that translates into impact on state policymaking is unclear. People seem to be very focused on what's happening in Washington. But how it impacts what the governor and the legislature does this year, we don't know yet. But we're certainly going to try to harness that energy and direct it toward these kinds of issues.
Well, do you think, Jennifer, that there was some big Democratic upsets in suburban areas outside of New York City, which you know, experts say, oh, this is the bellwether for 2018. Do you see that translating into, for example, legislative races, a win for Democrats in the state Senate, for example?
Well, I think that this year, with the governor running at the same time as the legislature, we're going to see a much higher turnout. And so this definitely, if that is going to happen, I think this will be the year that it's going to happen, because the turnout is just going to be so much higher than it usually is for these races.
I wanted to ask Susan about gerrymandering. It just seems like this is one of the very basic cores of democracy, small d democracy. And, you know, this decision in Gill v. Whitford could have some impact on New York State. Can you explain what will happen here depending on that decision?
Well, the decision is one where the Supreme Court is being asked to do what is to most people just common sense, and that is to recognize and set some legal standard that says partisan gerrymandering is as problematic as racial gerrymandering. Because right now, under the law, there's clear standards in the Voting Rights Act, one person, one vote, and that's been applied in situations where minority voters, ethnic communities, are denied the ability to amass any kind of political power by setting district lines that either split their communities up so they can't get together enough voters to elect somebody of their own choice, or they're crammed, packed into one district, and where they could, if they were properly apportioned, elect maybe two or three representatives, they get to elect one. So that's well recognized by the courts. But the courts have been hesitant to weigh in on partisan gerrymandering because they say, well, it's not quite as clear of a standard. So what has happened in Gill v. Whitford is that academics, good government groups like Common Cause across the country, have worked to come up with workable standards that the court could apply to say, yes, here's the line. If this measure shows this factor, this number, then that's partisan gerrymandering and that shouldn't be allowed. But to most voters, this is common sense. They look at the maps and they say, oh my God, we can see that this district was drawn with boundary lines to trace where all of the concentrations of Republicans are in Westchester, right, or all of the concentrations of Democrats at some in Long Island, in order to create safe seats for a particular party's candidate, whoever that candidate is.
So, what are you hoping you see from the Supreme Court?
What we're hoping is that the Supreme Court says yes, partisan gerrymandering is a problem, and extreme partisan gerrymandering is illegal and should not be permitted.
And what would that mean for New York?
What that would mean for New York is that there would be a standard that we could apply when the maps are drawn, and you know, to show that the maps aren't drawn on a fair basis that accords every voter an equal voice in choosing their representatives, but rather that everything has been gerrymandered and rigged so that a candidate from one particular party has an outsized chance, that the election result is almost prearranged based on the number of voters, the imbalance in the district that makes it easier for one party to always win and almost impossible, right, for the other party to get their candidate in.
Okay, and we're waiting for that ruling to come out from the Supreme Court at some point. But we have about a minute, I think, even less than a minute. Just real quickly, what do you want to leave my listeners with, Jennifer?
It's going to be a busy year. Stay tuned.
Yeah, how about you, Blair?
Don't accept the awful status quo as what you want. We should demand changes, and we should demand improvements in our own state government and certainly at the federal level as well.
Susan.
And it's on us, the voters. We have an opportunity to talk to all of our state representatives who are running for re-election and tell them we want change. We want to have elections that are accessible and fair for everybody.
Susan Lerner is the executive director of Common Cause New York. Jennifer Wilson, director of programs and policy at the League of Women Voters. Blair Horner, executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group. What you heard here today in these segments is what you're going to be hearing from January to June and beyond, what good government groups are demanding of the legislature and of the citizenry. So we'll be rooting you guys on. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Support for the Capital Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.